We had some thunder and lightning earlier on this morning. Did you see much of that around 4th where you are?
Nah, I saw a fair bit of the back of my eyelids about that time.
Thought so.
Yeah. But that's good. I like a bit of thunder and lightning.
True. And bringing the rain, so we're forecasting, well, the Bureau is forecasting 20 to 25 mils on the coast today and maybe 35 mils inland, so that's a fair bit.
Oh, yeah, it's a fair bit of rain. That'll throw the squid up, but I mean, the squid are going to finish up a little bit anyway because we can't catch them for the next month, but that's all right.
Yeah, well, that's that season, is it happening now, or I think we've got to wait till, well, I mean, you can catch them until the 1st of October, right?
Yeah, that's right. So there's still plenty of time.
So you got 1 week for the squid, yeah.
1 week for the squid, and they're still out there. Young Jeremy West, a local northwest fisherman, he caught some big squid off Devonport just recently. He was using some bright jigs, and they were up to 450 millimetre in the hood, so there's some big squid.
I reckon. Let's talk spring fishing in general.
Yeah, well, there's a few different practices that happen when the sun pops out and everyone starts to talk spring and everyone starts to throw some lures and get out and about and the weather's a lot better. Sean Coker-Williams, he went to St Helens and found a heap of nice silver trevally waiting in the flats. So that's always good fun, and that's a bit more of a springtime activity rather than winter. So he did quite well. And fish like King George Whiting come on the chew as well. The flatheads start to move about, so they're a bit tricky. But the King George Whiting, and we've got some big ones, the techniques are starting to be used by a lot more people. And Wade Hodgetts caught one that went 52 centimetres, which is a stonking King George Whiting.
That's a big fish, all right. Mm.
It is. So it's good to see that people are getting out and about and trying for a few different species like that. It's really good to see.
Right. Heard any other good local yarns from
Not really, but I heard you had one that was quite interesting.
Oh, yeah, Jerry, our afternoon announcer here at the station, is a keen fisherman, and he goes out pretty much every weekend if the weather's good. Anyway, he went up the Great Lakes with a couple of mates last weekend, and so there were two blokes, I believe, on shore, and then him and another bloke got in a boat, small one, as he said. I said, "How big was your boat?" And he said, "Not big enough." And so they went out evening, and they got stuck in the lake. The boat broke down, and then the mist came in, got real cold. And
I reckon. They came, real cold.
Yeah, and then the light on the boat wouldn't work. Luckily, they had a spare light, so they had to actually paddle. And they paddled and paddled and paddled, and they thought, well, eventually we've got to hit land because we're in a lake. And eventually they did, and lucky they didn't, like, hit a submerged tree or something and submerge the boat. But they did make it to land early hours of the morning, pitch black and cold, and they had to sleep in the boat because they had no idea where they were.
Wow. Oh, wow. I know, now, right? When you mentioned cold, you've quickly brushed across cold, but let's just talk about the cold that they would have experienced. That up there at this time of the year, sleeping the boat without the right equipment would have been like your femurs would have got cold. That's how cold, you know, it's cold when your bones and your legs get cold. Mm. And that's the sort of cold they would have been experiencing. Wow. Yeah. They were lucky boys.
I reckon, yeah. So, you know, anything could have happened. Like, you know, the main danger was probably hitting a tree and the boat going over, and then they would have been in freezing cold water. But, yeah, luckily they got to shore, spent the night in the boat, and then, and because the boat wasn't working, they then had to walk around for about 2 hours and find their mates. So,
wow, hell of experience. What were their mates thinking?
Well, they had phones on them, and they had phone reception, apparently.
Oh, okay.
So they could call their mates. Phone. Yeah, yep. But they didn't know where they were because it was night. Right? And they were in the middle of the lake. So they didn't know north from south, so they just had to... They were in regular contact, so that's good. So
Oh, yeah, that's fair enough. Oh, well, lucky escape.
Yeah, what about you? You must have had one or two lucky escapes during your time.
Oh, heaps. we've been down the west coast pulling pots with waves that come through, and it's funny how your voice changes octave when you're letting your captain... know what you should do. Give it away, give it away. No, we've had a few lucky escapes. especially with the weather and that comes through, but we like pride ourselves on being able to read the weather. It's crucial that you get a bit of an idea, but sometimes that weather will turn on you, and the weather's a weird thing. We've been out off Bishnoe and caught some hellish weather in a little pocket, and, you know, 4 or 5 nautical miles up, say, north, you get on the radio after you've just had to batten the hatches down and tell everyone to put their jackets on and get the rods in, and this is going to get serious. And you get them on the radio later on and say, no, we've never seen any weather. Look, she's been mint up here. So. Yeah, it's important to be prepared all the time.
Yeah, well, not a good day for fishing today. So wind's not too bad, but a fair bit of rain today. So pretty much a write-off today. But the weekend should be okay, I reckon.
Fantastic. Let's hope a few people get out there and have a fish.
Yeah, so what are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, that is a very good question. I've decided to actually finally get my trout license and go and have a lure fish. But now that the rain has come through again, it's going to be a bit tricky. I'll try and find somewhere a little bit lower down the river where in the fourth the water sort of slows down a bit. So I might go look for a sea runner down the front.
Righto. Hey, those whales, just tragic, hey? I mean,
oh, the whales! That's... We can't go anywhere without talking about the whales. Absolutely, a real shame, and it's a real tragedy. That's a lot of whales.
Oh wow! And one of the ladies who works here at the station, Karen, told me that she'd actually seen a beached whale over at near Strawn before, and it was still alive. And she said it's like they cry.
Yes, the noise I was saying was a bit ordinary, yeah. But it went from 70, and then it was 170, and then it was 200, and then they found the ones down the far end of the far end of Macquarie Harbour, and all of a sudden it's at 470. So that's amazing. A lot of international eyes will be drawn to that. So hopefully they might be able to start a fund. Because controversially, I don't think we are set up at all well to deal with the whales when they beach like that. I think you can see by the photos that, you know, there's ad hoc use of ropes and techniques and nets, and everyone's making it up on the fly. Mm. It's a bit of a tragedy if we're so worried about the whales, why we don't have, you know, a bit of kit sitting somewhere in a shed somewhere that's specifically designed to help, you know, save the whales in a hurry. But, you know, I could see by the video footage, there's all manner of ad hoc ropes and knots, and there's no real rhyme or reason to what's going on, which is a bit of a shame. Obviously, they've got some idea, and the Pipwi have got an idea, but I think it's time that maybe if there's an international outcry, that some international monies need to be pooled and set up a bit of a task force or a bit of something a little bit like the volunteer fire set up. We should maybe have a volunteer whale saving group or something. I don't know, but someone or a group of people that they can call on quickly to have some skills and some training to sort of facilitate some saving the whales a bit quickly. Because I personally think it's a bit of a disgrace that when it's dark they go, "Oh no, she's all too out."
I kind of agree with you there, because you think that with technology now, and like we can send satellites, and we can send gear to like far flung places in the solar system now. Surely we'd be able to find out a way that when they beach themselves on a sandbar, for instance, in the middle of the harbour or middle of a lake, not a lake, but you know what I mean, an inlet. That we'd be able to have some sort of equipment that we could suck the sand out in huge volumes quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. Like a big barge that's set up. Now, that's what I'm saying about this international money. Like, everyone that loves to, do the right thing for the animals, if everyone that was outraged about the whale sent $2 to somewhere, they could set up a barge or a system that could, trench, you know, into the whale, roll them into the trench you've just created and help those people that have been trained and well-versed in some sort of technique in being able to save the whales a little bit more quickly, and just to be able to have access to some lighting and some ability to get some lights and work through the night. Now, you know, they're doing a fabulous job, and I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, and they've saved some whales, but, I mean, they missed that first tide because I think it was all too hard and they weren't organised. There was a really good tide on that first night, and as far as I'm aware, they didn't really do anything because they didn't have the ability to see or do anything in a safe way, or probably didn't have the manpower, which is a bit of a shame. But, you know, I don't think lighting should be an issue in this day and age. You could set up some pretty cool lighting to be able to get something done on that first tie, because I think it's crucial that they do something pretty much straight away. But anyway, let's not pick that to pieces. There's another more controversial thing I thought about the other day. I'm just wondering, are we doing the wrong thing by putting them out to sea? We might have to have a pivot strategy, and controversially, maybe the whales should be put down at the beach, because you're putting out whales that want to boost themselves, and that's going out into the bloodline, and you're going to create a race of super beaching whales.
So you're saying it's a genetic hereditary thing that.
Well, no one knows really what it is, but I mean, isn't it crazy when you see that photo, that aerial photo of how they've all beached like that?
Yeah.
And the only other time in nature that you see that, and I got an interesting aerial perspective from that photo on the sandbar. You know, I've seen it before when I've stood in knee deep water and ankle deep water in Queensland, North Queensland, and even in Tasmania, when big fish push bait. And they get so panicky that they end up on the shore. They jump out of the water.
Yeah.
They try to get rid of a predator, and they end up on the shore.
Yeah.
Now, from the aerial photo, that's what it looks like. And I'm just wondering if, and I'm not saying this is the case, but what sort of a predator would it be to be making whales panic to that extent? It would have to be a massive pod of killer whales or a big group of sharks. And again, this is just I was being a bit silly about the bloodlines, but I'm being a little bit serious here. Something's pushing them out of the water. Is it giant squid? Is it a massive pod of killer whales? But you would think that if that happened, someone would have seen that happen over the years.
Mm.
If they were being pushed out of the water by a massive predator or a big school of killer whales, someone would have witnessed that, you would have thought, over the years. But it's extremely strange and really tragic circumstance that the whales beach themselves like that.
Yeah, well, they've been able to save, I believe, about 90 out of the 450-odd. So they might be able to, I don't know how many are left alive.
Well, I think they've done quite well with the ones that are on the sandbar, but, of course, the ones that ended up, 10K south down in the bottom of the harbour, which is a long way down in the harbour. I mean, they were already beached and perished, so, they couldn't do anything about those ones, but I think they've puddled together a bit of a reasonable effort for the ones on the sandbar. But I think it's time that, there was either a specialist department or they did something that meant that there was a number of people that they could, just get on the phone, that had some training and get it done a little bit quicker and a little bit more efficiently.
All right, got to go to the news. So plug your website, Facebook there.
Team Penn, Simrad Fishing and Go Fish Tasmania with Modern Hooch.
Love your work. Talk to you next week.
All right. Cheers, I can hear that rain now.
All right.